What's up, everybody? You're listening to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association podcast, a product of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association. To get the most up-to-date info, visit our website at or.nhsbca.org. Enjoy.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association podcast. I'm Eddie Townsend. I'm here with the head basketball coach of Saniam, J.D. Hill. J.D., how's it going?
Doing great. I help out a little bit. I still coach. I coach a little track and, just watching kids play sports and enjoying a little free time.
So you have a couple kids. How old are your kids and what are they doing right now?
11... 9 and 6. So my son's 11. And he's getting ready. He's going to do track here pretty soon. He's kind of in between. He just finished basketball around a little after we did. And then, I have a daughter, 9, and she's doing volleyball and she just is starting basketball again. And she will do track as well. So she's going to have 3 sports going here. And then I have a younger daughter, 6, and she's not really doing anything right now, but she might play some volleyball a little bit later. Oh, she will do track as well. They're all going to be in track here in about 2 weeks. So
full plate,
kind of. Yeah, it's crazy. Gets crazier all the time.
No doubt. I'm in the same boat. 3, 5, and 7. So we got 2 kids playing sports. I got ripped into coaching t-ball. And then, one kid isn't even doing anything right now, so I can't imagine when all 3 get going.
Yeah, it gets crazy. It's fun, though. It's enjoyable. You don't even worry about winning and losing. You just go and watch and have a good time.
Let's get into your basketball journey. If someone would look at the all-time scoring record in Oregon, you're on that list at some place there. Give us a little your basketball journey to where you are now.
Okay, so, I went to East Lynn Christian, played for my dad there. He's been a coach there all 4 years. I played varsity all 4 years. That's a big reason why I'm probably on that list. I wasn't the most prolific scorer necessarily. I scored some points, obviously, but just the consistency of 4 years of playing varsity basketball, able to get up there on that list. And after that, played it at Corbin, kind of injured here, there, sat out here, there. Altogether, I was at Corbin for a while, had a good time there. And then just got into coaching almost right away with my dad. Went back, worked as a teacher at East Lynn for about, 6-7 years, just being an assistant coach. And that was kind of this. I also coached track there as well. So coaching is just something that I've kind of always wanted to do and always be a part of. And then made the move to Saniam and became the head coach there. And that's kind of the story. So I think it's been 9 years at Saniam. Going next year will be 10. So, time flies. But, I haven't branched out a ton. I'm pretty familiar with two-way basketball. I mean, even before that, growing up, watching my dad, I think I was in about, I don't know what grade exactly, 3rd, 4th grade when East Lynn Christian went from 1A to 2A. And the Tri-River Conference, and I was a big fan then, and, I was just one of those kids that was just in love with the game at a young age, so I sat behind his bench, I did stats, I was all over it, so I'm pretty familiar with 2A and its history, and you could say I'm familiar with 3A too, because of, they pretty much used to be 2A together back then, so
right.
But that's kind of my journey. So I'm still pretty close to home though.
So you graduated, what, 2002, 2003?
Yeah, 2002. Yep.
Okay. So that's, yep. I mean, pretty much your whole life you've been in basketball, whether as a player, assistant coach, or a head coach. And so when did you initially go, you make the move from Eastland to San Diem?
Well, part of it, you know, is just a financial thing. I mean, if I'm being honest, I was just looking to make a little bit more money, and you could do that in the public sector. But really the reason that San Diem specifically, I kind of wanted to stay at a smaller school. That was a big part of it. And, you know, primarily I'm a teacher. I mean, that is my profession, my career. So I was just looking for a good fit for that. And, that happened to be a place I actually threw a basketball connection kind of in a way. Dave Plotz, who's been the coach up at San Diem for a really long time, he kind of heard through the grapevine that I was applying at some other places. And, he kind of called me and said, "Hey, we have an opening. A teacher just retired. Would you be interested in applying here?" And I said, "You know, I'll give it a shot." And I went up there and kind of one thing turned into another, and I got the job. And also, I didn't even actually know at the time that I was going to be coaching. They didn't have the boys' job wasn't available, and I thought maybe I might coach the girls, because that job was available, and then the boys' job became available by the time I had kind of got around to the next school year. So, yeah, that's kind of how that came about. So, but it's a great place. I feel, you know, God's put me He's just kind of directed my path, and He put me in a really good spot with a lot of really good people. Have a lot of good coworkers and just a good community. So I've met a lot of good friends here. So it's really a place I was meant to be. So I'm very thankful for that it's kind of all worked out.
So what was the first year that you were at East Lynn and then coaching? And what was the first year you started coaching with East Lynn?
I want to say 2007, because that would have been year – I would have been 2007, 2008, because that was after I graduated from Corbin. That's when I would have started there.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm pretty sure that was the first year. And those teams were pretty decent. Yeah, go ahead.
You guys, I mean, I don't know the whole trajectory there, but I don't know if it was your last year or one of your last years, you guys ended up winning the state title at Eastland, and you're an assistant there, and that was what, 2011, 2012?
Yeah, so I'm pretty sure it was 2012. I'm pretty sure it's 2012, because in
So he beat in the state title game 36-32, it looks like.
Yeah, and I was an assistant. I took the next year off of coaching. That's the only year I haven't coached high school basketball. And, so I think up to that year we won the state tournament. Yeah, and then I took 1 year off, and then I moved to San Diem. So, yeah, that sounds about right.
So you started in 2014 at San Diem.
Yeah, 13-14, yeah, pretty sure. Gotcha. So it would have been 12-13 when I didn't coach, yeah. So
then you're starting off in a brand new program to you, 13-14. The last time you coached, you're basically obviously in one of the most elite leagues in the state, in the Tri-River. I mean, you basically went to another team in the same league, right?
Yeah.
And so East Lynn wins the state title, you take a break, and then like a couple years later, you're coaching. So you went from that kind of success, and then you come into the San Diem opportunity. And how did those first years go for you?
Well, we weren't very good the first year. We were very young, and we didn't have a lot of experience at success, not necessarily even experience at at basketball. I think we won 3 games maybe my first year. And I think I started like 2 freshmen, 2 sophomores and a junior or something like that. And, nobody had played varsity before and, it showed. And, we hadn't had a winning season in at St. E.M. in a long time. It's like, I want to say almost 20 years. So, definitely not a, basketball really town at that point. It had a great tradition, like back in the 90s, they were really good. And some of those guys are still kind of around in the peripheral. And so they kind of remember the glory days, but we hadn't had that in a long time. And then the first groups though I had though, there's some good athletes in there, but kind of the problem that we've kind of had is just kind of keeping our athletes around here. You know, there's just other, you know, whether kids end up going to other schools or whatever. We have talent, but it wasn't really sticking around. I think when I started here, one of the first things they told me was, oh yeah, you guys, you know, got some good players coming up, but you know, we had like 3 or 4 kids at Silverton, you know, playing. So that lived in our town or from our, that were on our junior high team that won every game, but now they're not going to our high school. So, you know, just getting everybody to trust me right away was probably the biggest deal, and getting those kids to realize that, you know, they could have success and that it'll happen, that they got to take their lumps for a while because they're young. But yeah, we got better. I think we got closer to 500 the next year.
I'm looking at your records, and it's pretty impressive. I mean, you go obviously the 3-1 season, then you go 9-16, 12-15. And then we get to the 16-17 season, and some of those kids end up coming back to their hometown, the Downey brothers, and you got all those kids that played heavy minutes as freshmen and sophomores. And it's almost like a blessing in disguise that they had to go through that because they got all this experience. And then so in 16-17, you go 24-4 and win the state championship. We played that year. You know, and so just so everybody that's listening knows, I mean, at the same time, I'm starting my journey as the head coach at Toledo, and I'm going through, the league, the Tri-River League is a different beast. I mean, they're always having teams in the state championship game, let alone just making it to the state tournament. I mean, they perennially send 3 teams to the state tournament. And so just getting through that league is tough. So you're getting through this, I mean, you're just kind of taking your lumps, and then all of a sudden, boom, the blessings come, and here's these players that show up that are elite talents. So just walk us through, like, because I said the same thing when I was, you know, at Toledo, is just, hey, if I can retain my athletes, so if they're not going to Newport, they're not going to these other places, if I can just retain them, we're going to be strong every year. And so take us through, like, you're leaving the season before, you're coming into the season, summer ball and all the rest. When did you find out that you're getting these players back? And then when you got them back and you're going through the season, when did you know that, man, we got a shot at making some noise here in the postseason?
Yeah, I mean, I didn't really know they were coming back until pretty much school had started. We went through summer league, and we were actually we'd won our first league playoff game the previous season. It was like the first league playoff win for us. I think we beat Central in like a 4-5 game in our league playoffs. And then we lost a close one to Kennedy to actually at that time, I think you got 3 because it was like those automatic. And so we had actually played in that game to get that automatic spot.
There was no large.
And we had lost like a single digit game, you know. And so it was like we were right there, you know, to get into the state playoffs. And so there was a lot of just excitement from the
team. I was going to say that Kennedy team in 2016, they go on to the state tournament. They go 2-out, but they still make it to the state tournament.
Yeah. And I mean, yeah, we had good teams that we were, our records weren't great, but we were taking, you know, losses to teams. 3 of those teams every year were winning games at the state tournament or playing at the state tournament. So, you know, that adds a good 6 so losses every year to really good teams. But anyways, I didn't know they were coming back. They had played here. They went to, you know, elementary school here. I mean, one of my assistant coaches, Spike Arney, who's been a huge part of the basketball program since I've been here, he's the one who's developed almost all these kids. You think about some of the best players we've had up here, even up to today, and a lot of people know who they are, but those kids, Spike Arney is a guy who's helped them get in the gym.
Coaches, as you prepare for Summer League and the upcoming season, don't forget to renew your membership with the OBCA. Membership includes access to resources and mentorship from coaches across the state and the country, as well as access to Lucio technology used by NBA franchises. Membership starts at just $15. Don't delay. Renew your OBCA membership today.
Just like all the kids that have been interested in that, he coached them in junior high. You know, he's worked on with their fundamentals and got it. If kids call Spike and ask him to get them in the gym, he gets them in the gym. So that's kind of
so
something
awesome.
He's.
I mean, how important is that to build a program?
Well, I mean, without, you know, him doing that, you know, we wouldn't have some of those athletes we've had. It's huge. You have to have some kind of development. And, you know, I don't have time to be everywhere all the time. So just having him, you know, do that is a huge benefit. And it's a huge reason. And there were some other, you know, the parents of some of these kids around this era in 2016-17 have done a lot of work in junior high as well, or even in grade school, getting these kids ready. But when they came back, like I said, I didn't know until school started. No one really said anything to me. I think they didn't want to get my hopes up or anything like that. But we'd had a really good summer league. We played in South Albany summer league, and held our own. You know, we split games with South Albany, with Crescent Valley, you know, 5A teams. We were, you know, competing with them. And, so we were going to be a solid, what I would call playoff team, give ourselves a chance to, you know, do well. We had three really good players coming back, all league guys, lots of experience because now they played varsity almost 2-3 years now. And so we had high hopes. And then he obviously add in those two guys, you know, Julian
and
Jonah.
Legit college, they're both legit college players. I mean, you had what?
Yeah.
A first team All-State kid and, you know.
Well, player of the year and, yeah.
Player
and
of
I
the
think,
year. Yeah.
And first team All-State. Yeah, I think they were both first team All-State. So, they're, you know, terrific players. So, I mean, we went from, you know, thinking about let's get to Pendleton and see what happens to, you know, I think immediately everyone thought, and that's a big part of why we had the success, is like we can win a state championship. You know, this is going to happen. We just got to put it together. We didn't have summer league. We didn't play summer league together. So we spent the first half of the season really trying to figure each other out that year. And, it was a struggle. We lost our first league game to Kennedy in overtime. So we started off the league 0-1, I believe. And so, yeah, not a great way to start. We actually lost two games in a row because we lost to Colton, who got like fourth and 3A, I think. They were a good team at that time. And we lost two in a row, and we just weren't playing well. And we kind of made some adjustments, and things just started clicking. And the more they got used to each other, we just kept getting better and better and better as the season went on. So.
Right. Well, so then, I mean, we ended up playing you guys, and it was my team that, and you know, they're pretty young at that point, but you guys, I mean, it was so obvious. You guys were so talented. And then, I mean, we played a lot of those teams, you know, Stanfield, we played a lot of them, and it was just obvious that you guys were among the elite. So you went, you go to state, you beat Imbler in the quarters by a landslide, you know, well, 15, but still, you know, yeah, and then you beat, but the big one was you're in the state semis against the league foe Western Mennonite, who's now Western Christian, and you blow them out by 20. And I watched that game. I was there. I mean, it was an impressive win. And then you're going into the game against Stanfield. At that time, you know, Stanfield had some really good athletes. I mean, Dylan Grogan, you know, he was a baseball phenom, but they were 22-1 coming into the game. Yeah. And when you're going into that, you're going into a state championship game. I mean, what are your emotions? What are you thinking about? How are you preparing? If you can take us back to that time.
Well, there was a lot of nerves. I could feel it in the room, you know, as a, I don't know how you feel as a coach, but in all big games, you know, because you just feel like you can't get out there with them. There's a bit of nerves, you know, you just hope. I'm almost nervous about them being nervous, if that makes sense. And I could tell that a lot of them were, a little anxious. And we didn't play great in that championship game, for a lot of guys. A few guys obviously did. I think the nerves were a big part of it. All I talked about was just, you know, confidence and, you know, and belief in yourself really before the game. A lot of it wasn't X's and O's stuff. I mean, we obviously had some, you know, a game plan and whatnot, but it's really my message because, you know, I could tell the nerves were, that's the game they'd really been dreaming about all year. And so, I mean, we played really well the first two games. We came out, you know, against Imbler, and honestly, you know, it was probably the most impressive quarter. I think we were ahead 18-0 at one point. And then I started playing some other guys because realized that we're going to be just fine. And then that second game against Western Christian, I think the guys just wanted that game so bad. And, we'd really gotten to a level of defense where like, the guys just communicated so well. I mean, to this day, I've had some good defensive teams, man to man defensive teams, but the communication level, I think, was the most impressive thing. Just five guys that literally did not make mistakes defensively. So, and just communicated with one another, covered for one another. And so I think that was really – it saved us in the championship game because we didn't have the greatest offensive game. Basically, two guys had to score all their points, which was – I mean, I think people that watch that game think, oh, yeah, they always did that. Or really, if you look at how much they scored per game throughout the season, they didn't. It's just that that game they had to, and they're capable of it. But we saved ourselves because we held Stanfield to in the 50s. So the team that probably scored in the 80s. So that was really a big part of it. And if you looked at Stanfield in warm-ups and you looked at us in warm-ups,
oh man,
he probably would have been like, well, I don't know how they're going to stop these guys around the hoop, you know, because Stanfield had some size, athleticism, and we were a little bit.
I mean, they wanted to press you all game, and you know, it was pretty impressive the way that you guys stuck it to them.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't honestly worried about that. You know, Julian, nobody pressed Julian. Just one of those things, like the kid is just unpressable. if that's a word, but like he'll chuck it all the way down the court to the person who's wide open. You just can't put two people on him. There's somebody who's open and he will throw it to him. And he's got the vision and the, you know, timing and the coordination to do it. So, I mean, that's all we did is Jonah. And that's the thing is, you know, if Jonah Downey never played football, but if he would have played, he would have been the best wide receiver, you know, in two-way football by a long shot. So you could just throw it anywhere and he's going to go get it. So, I mean, it's just one guy to the other, that kind of thing. I mean, I think that's how we scored about our first 8 points, and then they realized they couldn't press us. So.
And that really messed them up too. I mean, because that's what they did all year against everybody. They just pressed. They just ran up score, you know, and it worked. I mean, you know, to go 22-1 to the state title game. But, man, when you get into that, you get on the big NBA floor, you got to try to do that. And not only that, but he was platooning guys. And so, you know, there's that system mindset of I'm going to platoon guys, we're going to press all game, we're going to shoot as quickly as possible. And, man, if a couple of those components don't go right, you're maximizing possessions, but the other team is scoring when they want. It can get a little dusty there, you know, for you. It can get problematic. So you end up winning the state title. So what I would say is what's some advice that you'd give to coaches, you know, that are on a quest to win a state title? What would be some, you know, advice that you'd give to somebody that has a great team and they have a shot? And what also would you give advice to when you're going into the big game? And, you know, it's maybe your first rodeo. What's some advice in those situations that you were in and you'd want to pass on?
Well, let's see. First of all, I would say, you know, you're not going to win a state championship without a little bit of talent. I mean, so you got to develop some talent. And as all coaches know, like, you want kids to accept their roles, but I can't even put into words really how well the team that won that state championship accepted their roles, and that was a huge part of it. And I know that, you know, coaches can't do everything, and that's credit to the guys that played for me. But really finding – that was a big, you know, turnaround in our season for us was to – I finally kind of figured out what decision-making all certain players needed to make, what they really needed to bring to the table, and I finally was able to communicate that clearly to them and get them to buy into that for, you know, just for the pursuit of winning. And they did that. And so that was a huge part of it. What was the next part of your question? Sorry, I'm kind of...
Oh, just, so, you know, like, let's say you are a guy that has a team that's going to, you know, have a chance to win a state title
or
make a deep run. You know, as they're preparing for the season, as they're going through the season, I mean, what are some advice and some thoughts that you have on that?
Okay, so one of the things that I was thinking about, too, is that I think sometimes you really have to think about the end of the year. When you're kind of building your team, and you gotta practice the things that are gonna help you beat the good teams, you know. And it can be easy to, you know, like if you have a good team that's gonna be one of the elite, you know, top five teams in the state, has a chance to win a state championship. When you go play that middle of the road team early in the year, it's tempting to just, hey, let's run a press and let's get ahead by 20 in the first quarter and then just have fun. But you got to think about, like, okay, that's going to work against them and that'll make this game easy. Or you can really challenge your guys to play man-to-man defense or whatever your core defense is and really work on it and be good in it to execute your offense, to actually do those things and to play the style you're really going to play. You know, and for me, I've always believed in, like, okay, half-court offense and man-to-man defense. And so those are the things that we worked on, and because we had to, because we were practicing as the season went on, and so that kind of worked out for us, trying to get familiar with one another because, you know, we didn't have that summer league to kind of figure things out. So, I mean, I would say that was a really big piece of it. And just getting, you know, think about who you're going to face. Who are the other elite teams out there? What do they do? And how are you going to find a way to beat them when you get to that opportunity? You know, for us, we knew Western. We were going to play them. I think we played them four times. I had to think about what do they do and how are we going to stop it? How do we build ourselves to a place where we can do that, you know? At that time, they ran a lot of pick and roll. We worked on pick and roll defense at like every day, literally every practice, because our main opponent ran pick and roll. So, you know, that's really what we were concerned about. So, yeah, I mean, that's a big part of it. You know, as far as like the actual game, I don't know. I think you know, when you're at the state tournament, you know this, you just take it one game at a time, you know.
Yep.
I'm kind of a, you know, like when I think about a scouting report or I'm going to play somebody, I was talking to another coach about this the other day. I really feel like you try and analyze that other team and you think about like, what are the two easiest ways for them to score points and try and take those away? Whether it's, is it a good player for them or do they run a certain offense that gives them some easy baskets or do they press you and get easy, you know, layups or what allows them to get to score a lot of their points? And let's just make it difficult. Like, you're not going to take it completely away. But if you can make something difficult for the other team, that gives you that little bit of advantage. So, I don't know. That's kind of what I do when I just look at that one opponent at a time. I'm really trying to analyze, you know, what are the two things that they're really scoring off of? You know, where do they get all their baskets? How did they get to 65, 70 points? Okay, let's make it a little harder. Let's get them down around 50 and give ourselves a chance. So that's kind of where I'm at. So,
so moving past that, you know, in context of the state championship, and congratulations to the huge feat. Doesn't it seem crazy that it was like 5 years ago at this point or whatever?
Yeah.
But so, you know, when you talk about building your team and thinking about what you want to run offensively, defensively, and all that, and developing players, what is like something in your basketball program that you really you want to focus on? That you know, is it a certain type of scoring? Is it a certain type of offense or defense? What is something that's like, hey, we hang our hat on this, and this is what we're gonna do?
I mean, people are gonna laugh if they watch us play this year, but probably man-to-man defense. I really think that you can really develop kids, teach them habits day to day if you really work on it every single day. This year we kind of went away from it, didn't quite have the athletes and inexperience in a couple positions, and so we didn't target that because, again, our – like who we thought about, who we'd be playing at the end of the year was a little bit different than it had in previous years. But I really, up until last year, I think man-to-man defenses, we did shell drill every day. And, you know, I really, as a lot of coaches probably do, but I just, you know, we played it 99% of the time in games. And if we did watch film, then I was talking about defensive rotations and communication and not just the first rotation, but a second and third rotation and forcing your players certain directions. There's things like that I really feel like how you run pick and roll defense.
You have to architect the entire defense. I mean, every little detail that it would fit together so there's no confusion. And I actually see sometimes when you're playing another team, and I'll watch film on a team, and you know they're pushing a guy one way, and they defend a ball screen, or their help comes from a place that doesn't make any sense, and it's just like they didn't think through it, or they didn't teach it well enough. But it happens consistently, you know. Yeah. And I mean, when I was in the 2A league, Coastal League, the Sunset Conference, you'd see a lot of different things like that. Now that we're in it's the 4A version of the Tri-River, which is the Oregon West Conference. I mean, they're all very well-coached teams that have, you know, elite talent. And you see exactly what you're talking about. Like, they've architected their defenses. And no matter what they're running, you know, some teams run a 1-3-1, some teams run some zone. But most teams play man-to-man, and they'll do it a little bit differently. But you can tell that every jot and tittle is just – detailed. So when it comes to like, what are the top three things that you want to see, you know, from your man-to-man defense, what are some of the things that you look at when you do those?
I would say first and foremost, you know, force baseline. I really feel like if you can teach kids to play arm's length away on the ball, and then if the guy drives, just don't let him go middle on the drive. The success rate of shots, even if they get that half step on a kid, we're talking about maybe the top 30 or so kids in the state, if that, are going to hit shots going to the baseline side when they're on the move. Like, it's just such a hard, you know, that little running bank shot. Or if you can just put up a little resistance and make them go baseline, not only are you going to get help for maybe possibly a charge or a block shot, but you're also, even if they don't get there, they just don't make that shot if you don't foul them at a high rate.
Right.
And so that's a big one for me. I mean, obviously the really talented kids can make shots like that. And so you have to do some other things, or you just have to help more. So then after that, you know, if you get that set where everybody forces their man baseline, then it becomes very clear who the help person is. And we help from, you know, the bottom on the weak side, and you don't over help. So you can't, that's, I think, what a lot of teams, and you were just kind of mentioning this, a lot of teams, like, I feel like they just tell their kids to help. And you right. have to, it has to be the right person helping. And so we work a lot on that. And then also you have to help the helper. You have to have that second rotation to rebound and to also take away the little dump pass. So you have to, and then you even have to have the third rotation rotate out to a shooter if they do stop and kick it or something like that. So you have to have all those pieces in place, and you have to work on it every day. And you got to talk about situations when, you know, you never know when you run shell drill and you're running a situational thing. You can design it how you want it, but then sometimes you let them play, and then things happen, and then you break it down and say, okay, every single time they score or get a good shot, what did they do to you guys to break you down? Okay, what should we have done instead? And just, you know, just making those little corrections over and over. But yeah, I mean, for me, force baseline. I feel like if Oregon ever got a shot clock, that maybe I wouldn't think that man-to-man defense is the best. I feel like with some, like, kind of soft full court pressure and then back to a zone, that a shot clock would be better, just to kill the clock, you know, a little bit. But I feel like with no shot clock and teams are able to execute for a long time, that man-to-man defense is where it's at. So that's kind of my thinking on that sort of thing. But, you know, there's a lot of ways to get it done. So that's just one of them, I think.
I like that.
Stay up to date with the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association on social media at facebook.com/OregonBCA or on Twitter at @OrHoopCoaches.
So, you know, over the years that you've coached, what are some things that you've noticed, like a change in the game, you know, things, you know, maybe in that the early 2000s to the late 2000s to the 2010s into the 2020s. What have you seen as, like, the evolution of basketball? What do you think, what are some things that you miss, and what are some things that you kind of wish, or you wish would progress more, or that you like the progression of?
Well, the biggest change, I think, and everyone would probably agree, is just the 3-point shooting. It's not, just old men complaining. It has changed a lot, for sure. Not that people didn't shoot threes when in the early 2000s, but, you know, almost everybody's running like a double post offense, and you only shot when they kicked it out to you. Very few teams, unless you were like run and gun, trying to copy Loyola Marymount, you know, nobody really just came down and chucked a three right off the bat. Like, everybody ran something and then passed it around. And then if someone was open from the three-point line and they were a good shooter, they would shoot it. You know, in high school, I shot about two attempts a game maybe from the three-point line. And in college, I probably shot two or three times that. So, I could shoot the ball, but, like, I have kids on my team right now that attempt nine. I've had the last couple of years kids that attempted nine threes a game. And another kid that will attempt six, and then one that will attempt four or five, you know. So we're shooting threes at a high rate. You know, just figuring out the efficiency on that is a big part of that. People are discovering that. And then, you know, the openness, there's not the two double posts anymore. You know, a lot more bigger kids, a lot of the bigger kids play more on the perimeter. But which was probably a little bit more rare, but, it happened back then. I played on the perimeter some in high school. And so I would say that's the biggest thing, just three-point shooting. But other than that, I don't know. I mean, you know, there's a lot more specific coaching now as the time goes on. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but, you know, kids have access, whether it's YouTube or just like individual coaches, personal trainers, they can go and they can do all the ball handling and all that kind of stuff that, you know, back in, you know, our day was probably, we had to go to a camp, you know, I don't know, maybe we were just a little, or watch a Pistol Pete video or something like that, you know, like,
yep.
Or it was that sort of thing. And now I feel like they got that, you know, everybody's doing that. There's just trainers everywhere, all over the place. Or it's just become part of practices where, you know, coaches are just having them doing the two ball dribbling drills. You know, like in my day, we didn't really do that. We did like our fundamental stuff. So a lot of that stuff was looked at as kind of flamboyant or excessive. But back then, and now it's like, you know what I mean? Like when I was in high school, if you went and I wouldn't say my dad necessarily said this, he wouldn't necessarily have a problem, but a lot of coaches back then, if you would go in the gym and they saw you shooting threes for a half an hour, the coach would be like, why are you spending all this time out here? You know, you need to be, especially right. If you're a bigger kid, you need to be in there. You're working on your footwork. Well, nowadays we're telling our kids, I want you to go shoot threes for an hour. You know, on the shooting machine. Right. So it's just, you know, things like that have changed. But I don't know that anything's for the worse, you know. Game of basketball, I feel like, is fun to watch. There's still strategy. There's still a lot of good peer coaching. You know, there's well-coached teams and some teams that aren't as well-coached. And it's, you know, the style changes a little bit. But I think post work is coming back into the game, or I felt like watching March Madness this year. I don't know if you noticed that, but
well,
you see in the NBA too.
Is, you know, it's almost like there's this pendulum swing where, you know, everybody's like, okay, we're going to spread out. We're going to go five out, four out, one in, but then you go up against a team that maybe they go high low, you know, like we had to play a team in Cascade who had two really good post players, and they did a lot of high-low action, and so did Philomath, who had two good post players. And so you're playing these teams that are – I mean, listen, there's teams in college basketball, not necessarily the pros, but they do a lot of high-low action, and it is tough to deal with. And, you know, especially if you've got more than one shooter. I mean, if all of a sudden you've got, you know, maybe a kid on the baseline that his defender has to – help because we're fronting the post on a high low, but he can't because his guy in the corner can hit a three. Well, you're done, you know, because you're damned if you do, damned if you don't. You help down, you know, all of a sudden we're fronting and we're helping on the backside. They kick it to the corner, he hits a three. Then you take away the three. Well, they dump it down to the post and he's got an easy layup, maybe even an and one. And so it's like, what do you do there, you know? And so I've actually, this year, I thought a lot about that, how, you know, if you have the personnel, it's, And even if you don't have the personnel, I was even thinking if you have like five guards and instead of just doing five out, you did like a high low. I mean, a lot of teams honestly don't work on,
their kind of defense.
Post to post defense or like fronting the post or high low action. I mean, you really, and if you do work on it, I mean, you're sacrificing, you know, that prep time for something else. And so I've actually thought about that as like, okay, you know, if you had a system of not only developing the 3-point shot is which is what I try to do, but also a system of developing great post work, even amongst your guards. I mean, you look at Villanova and they have a great, I mean, if they've got a guard that feels like he's got a mismatch, he just dribbles the guy down to the post and just goes to work, you know?
Yep.
And it's like, I really like Villanova, by the way. I like the way they're, you can just tell how well coached they are.
Yeah.
I mean, they're always landing on 2 feet. They're always very fundamental in everything they do. And I just, like, I really want to just go over to Philly and, you know, spend, like, a couple days watching some of their practices or something.
Absolutely.
So,
Jay Wright has got something figured out there that, to me, he's, I mean, there's a lot of really good coaches in college, but he's doing something that he's turning, you know, good college players into great college players on fundamental, just using fundamentals, 2-foot jump stops and stuff, which is crazy, you know, at that high level of basketball to be able to do that. So,
no, I totally agree with you. So, and let's, I mean, it is Tuesday, April 5th. So yesterday was the national championship game. I don't know if you watched it, but we saw, you know, one of the best games, you know, I don't want to be, succumb to the moment, but it just seems that it was one of the best Final Fours that I've really, I mean, other than maybe the Villanova game, Villanova played Kansas. I mean, and kind of sucks because Villanova is one of their best players was hurt, but you saw these matchups, you know, you saw Duke UNC, you know, the Coach K, you know, extravaganza there. And then you saw Kansas beat Villanova, and then you saw this amazing, I mean, and that Duke North Carolina game was really good, and then you get this game where, I mean, at the very beginning I'm like, oh man, Kansas is going to run away with this, and then all of a sudden they go down 16 points, and then you know, North Carolina, well, I mean, Kansas just came out and they started running, they just started playing hard defensively. I mean, man, the defense really is impressive, and they make this comeback. And so what was your overall thoughts of, you know, Final Four, National Championship, or even the tournament as a whole?
I thought that the UNC-Duke game was one of the best college games I've ever seen, honestly. I mean, they just shot after shot, back and forth, just guys making just big-time plays. A lot of NBA players in that game, you know, future NBA guys, so... You know, there's a little bit less defense. Like, I felt like those two teams were a little bit, like, you know, they relied on their just natural size and athleticism a little bit more defensively. You know, Coach K makes his players put a lot of ball pressure on, but there's sometimes some of the other stuff, their help side and stuff is all based on their athleticism, and North Carolina is a little bit like that too. And so it was a high scoring, just back and forth. You know, just watching athletes play, and that was just a great game. And the championship game was awesome as well. But you see Kansas, they're a little bit more disciplined defensively, and that really got them back in that game. But my impression of UNC the whole time is just they're a very emotional team. I don't know if you watched the game against Baylor. They were just it helped them sometimes, and then it hurt them sometimes all tournament. Like, They just get fired up, and then they just go on these runs that are insane. You know, they did it a little bit against Kansas. They did it against Baylor. They did it at the end against UCLA. And then they have these spells where they kind of go back down to earth, and Kansas was finally – they were the first team that was finally able to get over the hump at the end of the game against North Carolina. But, I thought – March Madness was excellent this year. There's so many I don't know if it's the transfer portal or what's going on exactly.
I think the transfer portal, What happens is that you can't stockpile talent anymore
to
this same level. I mean, it's like, you know, if you don't play a kid, he's gone.
Yeah.
And so but what that does is it creates this situation where now you have more parity amongst.
Yeah.
But that doesn't answer why St. Peter's, a 15 seed, can make it all the way to the Elite Eight. I don't, you know, and that's been happening. There's a lot of upsets this year. So it's like, how does that happen now?
Well, it's just, you know, shot making. Even those St. Peter's guys, I know they're not the big time recruits. And if you look at them, some are a little small or not as athletic at certain positions. But like, if you can shoot the ball, you know, at certain times, like you can get to your spots, like that one guard on St. Peter's. He just gets to a spot in the lane, the point guard, I think it was, not the shooter. But the other one, he just get into the lane and just do a little step back. You know, like he just had a shot he could go to and it just, you know, they're just dynamic and they got it done. They outplayed the other guards they were against every game. And, but there's enough parity, like you said, that doesn't seem like they should win and they shouldn't be as good, but like, you know, there's just so much talent out there. You know, the game of basketball is getting better and better, just honestly overall. And, you know, coaches, whether it's through just, you know, there's just more coaches now too or what, but you know, the secrets are out and everyone's playing. You watch all that, you know, March Madness, all those guys, obviously they're college coaches, but just a lot of good coaching. You know, just good basketball. I was really impressed with the tournament this year. It's probably one of the best displays of basketball I've seen in a long time. And like we kind of already talked about, I saw a lot more post-centric offenses than I had in a long time, which is really interesting. And you were talking about the guards. Yeah, teams are posting up guards and forwards and stuff like that. UCLA posting up their forwards constantly. And, you know, obviously North Carolina and Kansas, the two teams in the championship. You know, Bill Self has always been kind of a post-centric coach, so he's still kind of true to that. But then North Carolina is as well with a little bit with different guys, so. Kind of interesting.
Right. Can't get enough of the Oregon Basketball Coaches Association podcast? Go to our podcast website at anchor.fm/OBCA and subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcast, or wherever you meet your podcast needs.
So I was getting so fired up last night. I mean, it's just, you know, it's there's nothing quite like the highest level of basketball. You know, there's so many things in it. There's and when you talk about high school basketball, I mean, there really is nothing like, you know, a home playoff game. There's nothing like going to the state tournament, you know, just all those feelings when you do that. It's a really fun time. And, you know, when you're watching the national tournament, it's similar, you know, and I don't care what level of basketball it is. It's, you know, whether it's 1A through 6A in Oregon or, you know, small college to NCAA Division I, obviously there's different nuances to it. But, I mean, when you watch those tournament games, you know, and that's just the season that we're in right now, what does it kind of invigorate you as a coach? Does it get you excited? Or what are the emotions that you go through as you're watching it?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, it gets exciting. I mean, I love that first day of March Madness, the first 2 days of March Madness, just all those games, just flipping between the channels. It's just, for me, it's like Christmas, you know. Usually after, you know, it's always after our seasons are over, and it's just like that one last, you know, taste of basketball, and it's just so exciting. It is. And every weekend for like, 3 weeks, you just get to, you know, kind of sit back and just enjoy.
Really, the first two weekends of the first weekend is by far the best. And
yeah.
It's normally,
you
know, rolling right into spring break. And that second weekend is pretty good too. But, you know, and the Final Four is good, but there's just, you get used to there being like 20 games on and you're just like, sometimes I want to sit down with the NCAA people and be like, why do you do this like this way? Why do, like during the Elite Eight or the Sweet 16, why are we doubling up games to where we have to choose one to watch?
I got fired about that too. Why can't you stagger games when there's only four games all day? But I know what you're saying, but yeah, the first 4 days of the tournament are, I mean, it's amazing. You know, I know, I'm not sure my family agrees, but like, cause I just sit in front of the TV for 4 days. As soon as I, you know, get home this year, I actually didn't at school peek at anything. I didn't look at, you know, I had to work and I didn't look at any scores or anything. I just got home and then started watching. So yeah, that was pretty good.
So then you like, so all the games that you missed, did you go back and watch them or did you just look at the scores?
I didn't watch all of them, but I watched some of the highlights when I got home and looked up all the scores of all the games and checking my bracket and whatnot, which my bracket was terrible, but yeah, just that kind of stuff. But most years at school, I'm constantly checking and all that kind of stuff, but this year I just kind of, I wasn't as, distracted, so that's probably a good thing. But no, then I didn't have to work Friday, so I was all over it for the next 3 days. That's pretty much all I did was watch basketball. But I don't know, it gets you excited. You know, he gives you ideas for the next season, and, you know, just, it's not that I'm sitting there drawing every X, as you know, you don't draw every X and O, every play down or anything like that, but you just start to see concepts and kind of themes develop. As if you're a coach, you can't watch basketball without really picking up on the game plan, you know? And
yeah,
you just get to see all these different game plans and you get to see like, oh, I see what that team's trying to do there, you know, or maybe you get to be that Monday morning quarterback and say, oh, they should have done this. So you get to just think through that decision 60 some times, you know, as you're watching all these games. And so
I'll be honest with you, sometimes is there not times while you're watching an NCAA tournament where you're just like, what is this coach thinking? Like over and over. Like even last night, I mean, listen, Bill Self won the national title. But when, okay, you're up three.
Yeah.
With like 4 seconds to go. Like,
All
you got to do is get the ball in. You don't have to run up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You don't have to do anything special. I mean, they gave North Carolina another chance to tie the game. You know?
Yeah.
It's just unbelievable to me that happened. But there's so many, there's a lot of instances in the national tournament where it's like, man, really? But obviously,
great
coaches. It's just like in that moment. And so what does that say to you? Like when how much time during the year do you spend on situational practices?
Man, that's always one thing that I wanted to get better at and doing more of. Finding time for it though, it's hard, you know. We don't have those college teams, they start practice, you know.
Right.
You know, like basically when school starts and then they practice forever. And all the time, and their preparation is not a problem for them. But for us, you know how it is with limited practices. Our season's starting so late. If your football team has success, you know, we went into a lot of seasons with 1-2 practices in our first game because our football teams made it to, say, championship game or, you know, quarterfinals or whatever. So,
right.
Your preparation is a problem. And you're just trying to get, hey, can we run our offense right and remember where to run to for the first couple games, you know? So, but situational, try and do that sometimes, a lot of times, like on a Saturday or something like that. Try and, if we have a Saturday practice, try and put that together and just think through some different situations and talk strategy and fouling and, you know, late game situations if you need to foul or, you know.
Yeah.
How do you get a quick shot? Yeah.
is I have it now, so I've got like a list of maybe 35 situations, 50 situations.
Uh-huh.
You know, like 8 seconds to go up to, you know, the opponent is at the free throw line on a 1-on-1, and then you just put like, or whatever this is. And I try to maybe once or twice a week do like a 5-minute segment where we just go mm-hmm. through a couple of those situations. And it just gets, you know, I like to lay it out and just be like, hey, here's the situation. What do you guys think we should do? And, you know, mm-hmm. they start to think through it. And then we talk through, like, okay, this is what probably should be done. And then they're like, oh, and they start to figure out, like, because it's really crazy to me. Some kids, they don't understand the bonus. They don't understand double bonus. They don't understand the possession arrow. Like, you got to think through all of those situations when you're in that, you know, it's kind of like a chess game. And if you don't think about it, you don't prepare for it mentally, and just touch on it, then when you get in those situations, I feel like sometimes you see, well, I've seen coaches crack. I've seen players and teams crack in those high, because it's hard to recreate those situations, the feeling of them, but you can at least recreate the mental, you know, acuity for it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you gave me a hard time, and I remember, I think it was after the state championship game, because I called a timeout at the end of the game, and I basically let them drop a play, but I called it because I wanted my guys, I didn't want anybody to do something crazy, because we were ahead by, I think, 2 or 3 or something like that. Or maybe that wasn't the state championship. Maybe that was the next year or whatever the year we played in, like, the consolation game or something. And you were kind of giving – I think you won the state championship. Yeah. And with Toledo. And you were giving me a hard time after the consolation game because I called a timeout at the end. But, yeah, just not wanting my guys because I didn't want them to foul on a free throw or something. You know, I just wanted them to – didn't screw that situation up. So, that's something that I – definitely need to improve on, and that's a great idea, just putting it in here, there, finding time to teach them about
that.
And
another thing I do is I'll just have a practice, like my practice plan is, you know, I obviously take it from years before, but it'll be like 38 pages long. So it's like all of the practice plans I've ever done saved on one, you know, and when I make a new one, I just save it as that day. And so I can go back and look and be like, what was that? You know, and then so I never forget, because it's crazy how you'll get like a season or two later and you're like, wait, how did I do that drill? And I'll go back and look and like, oh, yeah. You know what I mean? So it's just there in my little document. But, well, hey, we better, you know, we're getting close here. And I just wanted to, there's a segment that Derek Dumont, he's the OBCA president. And, you know, he did this thing called the shot clock segment here. And I just want to go through that and ask you a couple questions. So I'm gonna basically go quick. You got to just answer as quick as you can. And then we'll go over a couple of those things at the end. Are you ready?
All right. I'll do my best.
Okay. Do you think Oregon basketball should have a shot clock?
Yes.
What are the complications of adding a shot clock?
Correct user or user error.
So should it be instituted at all levels, JV through or freshman through varsity, and 1A through 6A?
1A through 6A for sure, but I would say varsity only.
How long should it take to implement the change?
They should just do it.
You have a shot clock. You're up 3, 10 seconds to go. Do you foul?
No.
How big of a lead do you have before you pull off your press?
15-ish.
What's your go-to on-ball screen policy? Defense.
Hedge, high hedge with the screener's defender. and the on-ball guy goes under the screen.
Would you be in favor of starting the season the first week of November?
Practice? Absolutely.
Do you think the three-point line should be moved back?
Not in high school, no.
Are you in favor of the 5A, 6A off-season practice model?
Yeah, I think that's fine.
What's your favorite sports movie?
Oh, I don't know. Hoosiers.
How do you celebrate after a big win?
Come home and get a good night's sleep.
What's one word the officials would use to describe J.D. Hill?
In the way.
Oh, man. Last one, how do you want to be remembered by your players?
Man, it's a tough one. Just someone that cared about him, that wanted to see him have success and believed in him, taught him how to have confidence in themselves and how to compete.
That's awesome. So you're going into what, your 10th year next year? Is that right?
Yep.
So what can we expect from the 2022-23 San Diego Wolverines? What do you what's some goals that you have for the guys?
I think it's going to be a big year. I feel like we kind of had like kind of a COVID hangover. I don't know. We're a little bit down in the dumps to start at the last couple years, really. And I think towards the end of last year, there's the mindset, there's just a switch that kind of flicked on for a lot of kids. Just the excitement level for basketball really changed. And I feel like that's really going to change the trajectory of where this team goes next year. So I really have high hopes for them, and I think they're going to do well. They're putting in time right now, already in the off season. There's a lot of them going out there, getting in the gym when they can, working on stuff by themselves and playing whatever teams they can play on, just having multiple open gyms a week. So, you know, when they're ready to go for summer league and already talking about wanting to do that and asking about what they're going to be doing then. So you know how it is when the kids are bought in and when they're excited, it makes it fun. And you also see people get better and that's what's going to happen. I mean, it's just a simple fact that when you practice, you get better. So, I feel like we'll be better than we were this last year. You know, we're in a tough league. It's only getting tougher. We're adding Regis into it and Blanchett and wow. I don't know who else. So it's going from, really good league to a really, really good league. So, but, you know, I have high hopes. I think we can do well, really well next year. And if you can do well in our league, you can make it to the state tournament and you can win some games. So that's what our goal is going to be. And really, I'm excited because they're excited and they want to get better. And I don't think there's anything better as a coach or more exciting. There's something that gets you pumped up is when your players want to get better. And,
right.
And that, you know, that's where we're at. So I'm excited. I'm really excited. So
that's cool. Well, I really appreciate you coming on and sharing your thoughts and memories and advice with us. And we wish you nothing but the best going forward.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on there. And it's always fun talking to you.
Well, everyone, I hope you enjoyed the conversation with JD about his adventures in coaching and life. Tune in next time as we talk with Baker boys coach Jabron Jones. Until next time, keep grinding.